is the Sports Hub Hockey Show with Ryan Johnston, Judd Zerod, and Bob Beers on the home of the Bees, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
7 seconds left. Puck sent over to the far side. Wagner's got it. He's just going to eat it. The Boston Bruins are going to start their longest trip of the year. A 5-game, 12-day journey out west. They win in Anaheim for the first time in 7 years. Pick up 2 huge points. And for Yaroslav Halak, he pitches his 4th shutout of the season. Your final tonight, Bruins skunk the Ducks 3-0.
Welcome into another edition of the Sports Hub Hockey Show here on a Saturday morning. Ryan Johnston in our Town Fair Tire Studios. Joined this week by Ty Anderson, 98.5thesportshub.com.
What's going on?
Hockey writer, sports writer in general, all-around good guy.
I try.
Here bright and early after a late night of watching West Coast hockey. Hear Judd Surratt describe it. It sounded like they were taking a covered wagon out west, like, you know, 12-day journey through
leaving
the western
Independence, Missouri,
through the western states that have yet to be discovered. But a win last night, 4 wins in a row for the Bruins. That's the good news. The bad news this week that David Pastrnak is out for a little bit. Don't know exactly how long, but out for a little bit after a mishap last Sunday night, falling on his way to his transportation.
Yeah, I mean, that's obviously the big news there is everyone wants to read into it, find out why this happened, how this happened. I feel as if you read between the lines, you're going to find out what happened, you know, if you will. End of a long, you know, I think it was 5 games in 8 days stretch for the Bruins. Go with your teammates, off day on Monday, 11:30 at night. You know, you can do the math there. I think he's apologetic. It's one of those things where it's just unfortunate for the Bruins. Bad timing. Obviously, this is sort of this test their depth now, right? This has been the whole thing of the whole season is can they survive X, Y, and Z? I mean, arguably the second or third biggest injury of the year now. I think last time I was here, we talked about Bergeron and Chara being out, and now Pastrnak's out. So maybe it's me. I don't know. Maybe I'm the curse. No, but this is one that really tests what they can do, their depth, especially on that right side. You're talking about a team that is not built on the right side very well. This is the biggest injury to date, in my opinion.
This was the statement that they put out. Pastrnak and several of his teammates attended a sponsorship dinner on Sunday night. At about 11:30, while walking to his transportation, Pastrnak fell and injured his left thumb. Team will know better in 2 weeks, but Pastrnak is expected to return and play this season. That last part, okay, because everybody's concentrating on what was he doing? It's 11:30 at night. He's, you know, walking to his transport. Well, look, I mean, it's, you can read, you said, you can try and read between the lines there and figure out what happened. The sponsorship dinner, were they out, you know, partying it up with sponsors? Was it like the team sponsored dinner, like a rookie dinner type of a thing? Like that, I think we can all generally assume that there might have been some alcohol involved in this. But I would also say, you know what? It's February. There's icy spots. Maybe he just slipped on some ice on his, you know, on his way to his Uber or whatever.
It was like 60. 2 days before that,
but
like,
yeah, but there was snow on the ground,
course,
so it
yeah,
melts and then it refreezes, and you know,
I don't know if it snowed yet. I think the snow was like a day away. I don't think it snowed
work
yet.
Work with me here.
All right, I'm trying.
But the end of it is what got me. Is look, he fell, he injured his thumb. That we know. The team will know better in 2 weeks, but Pastrnak is expected to return and play this season. And I went, whoa. That opens the door that this is more severe than just, well, you know, a couple weeks we'll reevaluate him and maybe he'll need, you know, a week or so of, you know, being able to grip the stick and then we'll put him back out on the ice. Like just the fact that they even put that into play, that we expect that he'll be back this season, is like, well, that means that they're not 100% certain that there's not going to need to be some surgical intervention here that would be a longer-term thing.
Yeah, they sort of buried the lead there, right? You know, He might play again in his career. We're not sure yet. No, I think that's team speak, right? The 2 week is team speak. It's going to be 3 to 4. If we're talking a thumb, we're talking ligaments, whatever.
2 weeks to reevaluation.
Exactly.
Is not 2 weeks to play again.
Yeah, you don't just go, oh, wow, it's actually really good. That surgery was really quick. All right, go at it. Go back at it. You know, especially he's going to be playing 20 minutes a night down the stretch here with this team, and they have so many games. They finish with like 25 games in 50 days now, so it's basically every other day from here on out. So I think it's 3 to 4. I think he does play again this year, unless the surgery doesn't take and he has to go back in and there's another procedure, which to my knowledge, there hasn't been any of that so far. I mean, they're out on the West Coast, so it's kind of hard to, you know, see exactly how he's doing or what he's doing. But I don't think that this is going to be a season derailing kind of injury. But I do think it's closer to 3 to 4 weeks than 2 weeks.
Well, the concern is, look, I expect that he will be back. I mean, you know, again, unless they've gotten it wrong here, he will be back. The concern is he the same guy when he comes back? I mean, you're talking about a guy who, you know, is good. He's a good shooter, good stick handler, things like that. You're talking about an injury that affects his hands. And so if he's, you know, 75% and, you know, the grip isn't quite right or, you know, it's bothering him down the stretch, is he the same guy? Because the way that this team is built and the way the team is built may change in the next 9 days, but the way this team is built, if David Pastrnak is not David Pastrnak in the playoffs, you are screwed. You are not competing in, you know, with a team like Tampa Bay if Pastrnak is not on his game.
You're not competing with the Islanders, for that matter, if you don't have Pastrnak on his game or any of these teams. You know, it's one of these things where he needs to be right for the postseason. The problem now is that, you know, and they've done a good job here of getting some points and stringing some wins together. They cannot afford a slump of any sort. They cannot afford a 3 or 4 game slide because now you're talking wild card. Now you're talking, okay, where are you sliding in? You know, do you have to rush him back because you need the wins, you need the points, you need the goals? I mean, this is the time for Don Sweeney. I mean, these next few weeks are probably the most important few weeks of his entire tenure as GM. What does he do? He needs backup for Pastrnak. You can't go, oh, well, Hyden's scoring now and DeBrus looks pretty good and all right, that's okay. Those are our deadline pickups. That's not how this works.
I feel like this is this happens a lot, though, as you approach the trade deadline. And with this team, it feels like just about every year we go toward the trade deadline, and it's like, well, they really need to do this. They might have a couple of areas of need that they really need to address. And then in like the couple of weeks leading up to the deadline, some guys start playing better, and then you start trying to maybe talk yourself into, well, maybe they don't need to. No, they do. Like, there's no doubt. They can't rely on it. And look, we're going to talk about Danton Heinen today because he's found his game here in the last couple of weeks. And as you said, you know, Jake DeBrusk is popping goals in here again. And so you're starting to see these guys live up to their expectations, but if they haven't done it through the first 50 games of the season and you get a stretch where they suddenly come alive for 5 or 10 games, you can't then extrapolate that out and say, well, they're fine from here on out. Like, you have to go with what we've seen for the majority of the year. And the majority of the year tells you that they're not sound enough at those positions.
No, it's a difference of years, right? Like, if this were happening 2 years ago, I'd say, oh, well, you know, you could be a little patient. Now, no, you need to strike now. Like, I'm sick of hearing, well, we have all these prospects. You can't get rid of any of the prospects. Every prospect you've put in an NHL lineup this year has stunk, and their value has actually gone down. Like, I'm not here for the prospects. I'm here for another championship run with Patrice Bergeron, who's going to be 34. David Krejci is going to be 34. Chara's going to be 42 next month. You know, your two goalies are entering their mid-30s. Go get somebody right now. Stop waiting. Like you're not built for 3 years from now. You're built for right now.
Well, you're built for right now. You're built for the next 3 years, right? I mean, that's kind of the window. Like, and Chara may not be here for the whole thing. Like, I anticipate that he's still got another year or two left in him at, you know, at a similar pace. But you're basically built for, and then down the road, I mean, who knows where you go from that? By then, you know, Pasternak is one of your leaders, and McAvoy hopefully is, you know, is your top defenseman, and Carlo is playing an even bigger role, and those guys. But you're built for, with the guys that you mentioned, with Bergeron, Marchand, Krejci, like those guys being your top guys, you're built for the next 2 or 3 years to really take a run at it. And then those guys will start to fade away and, you know, eventually will go somewhere else or will retire, and it will be on the guys who are young guys now to carry the entire load. But I agree with you. Last year, when they made the Nash deal, I was like, no. I mean, I wasn't a huge fan of Rick Nash to begin with, but I thought too much for a team that I wasn't sure was quite ready to go yet. This team has holes, but I feel like the young guys are starting to come along far enough where you're entering your next window here. And you've got that window open for 2 or 3 years, and then you don't know what it's going to look like after that. So you only get so many cracks at it. You got to take it when you got the opportunity.
Yeah, and it's one of those things, too, where you look at what they have right now. They have a lot of, like, their surpluses on the left side. Left shot defenseman, natural left shot left wingers. Mm-hmm. You have to sort of leverage this at a certain point into something more. And I look at this team, right? You look at them last week and even last night. Like, this team, they are legitimately one or two pieces away from being a legitimate contender. Like, they need a third line center, and you need another winger. Like, if you can get that, like, I think you can beat the Maple Leafs. And, you know, I don't know if you're not a favorite to beat Tampa Bay, but, you know, weird things happen. Like, who would have thought that the Capitals would overcome all of their struggles in the postseason last year and pull it off? Like, that was a team built to win, sure, but I don't know, were they built to win the Cup? Probably not. Like, Vegas, were they built to go to the Cup? Probably not. Like, you have to put yourself in the best position to make that run with this group. You know, and Bergeron is incredible. Like, he's on pace for 80 points this year, which is crazy when you think about the time he's missed and the way they tried to kind of limit his minutes a little bit. It's one of those things where I think doing anything besides going all out for these guys is a disservice for what they've done for your organization.
Well, and look, I raised the question a few weeks ago to Bob Beers. I said, because I was hearing it from some people here that, well, you're not going to beat Tampa Bay. I said, well, you know, do you go out and make bold moves? Because, you know, there's nobody out there that you're going to put on this roster, one guy who's suddenly going to make you a favorite against Tampa Bay. And Bob Beers said, well, you might be playing in the Metro Division. Now, that is since, you know, they've moved up in a more secure spot in the top three right now. But he also said, you don't know what can happen in the last few months of the season. Like, what happens if Kucherov breaks his leg?
Yeah.
Right? What happens if Stamkos has been injury prone in the past. We've seen it happens against the Bruins more often than not. But, like, what happens if they lose a significant piece off of their roster and they're not the same team when the playoffs come around?
No, exactly.
Like, there's a lot of things factor in there. So you can't just be like, all right, everybody needs to cede the Eastern Conference to Tampa Bay, and you're like, let's not even put the effort in.
It's a ridiculous notion, especially when you consider the fact that last year the Bruins looked like a wagon, and then Rick Nash was concussed, and he wasn't the same. I mean, Rick Nash last postseason was very reminiscent of Mark Savard in 2010, where you're watching him going, wow, this guy is a shell of himself right now. He can't do this. You know, it's one of those things where I go all out. I really do, because you're only going to have so many kicks at the can, you know, and especially with this group as they enter their mid-30s. Like, Patrice Bergeron's producing at a level that is unparalleled in terms of his role and his age. You look at the guys who are in their mid-30s and play a similar role, none of them have point-per-game seasons anymore. They all experience that Backus-like, Kessler-like drop where they go from being 50, 60-point guys to 20, 20, 30. You know, like, you got to reward this guy. Reward this team with actual talent and actual line mates and a real shot at winning the Cup.
It is amazing how much better David Krejci has been with actual line mates around him.
Weird how that works, right?
617-779-0985. We're started here on this week's edition of The Hockey Show. Again, Judd Surratt will join us coming up later in the hour. We will get to your calls coming up next here on a Saturday morning. Ryan Johnston with Ty Anderson in studio this week.
You're listening to the Sports Hub Hockey Show on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
98.5 The Sports Hub, Ryan Johnston, joined by Ty Anderson for this week's edition of The Hockey Show. 617-779-0985, of course, is the number. Let's get started with your calls. We got Maria in Watertown up first. Good morning, Maria.
Good morning. Hi, Ty. How are you?
Hey, Maria. How's it going?
Good, good, good. Hey, I promise not to mention Tory Krug's name during the course of my call here, because I know how much that sets you off.
Oh, it's too early for that.
Yeah, I know, I know. I just wanted to say that I wholeheartedly agree with everything that both of you said in terms of getting this team solidified. And I'm just going to elaborate on that a little bit, in that I'm becoming very, very frustrated with Donnie Sweeney and this revolving door of wingers. And again, I hearken back to last season, where you knew what your downfall was when you got spanked by Tampa, and you did really nothing in the off season. And I think what you've actually done is hurt your opportunity to get a seasoned player on here, because I think he overvalued what these kids could do at the NHL level. You've been, you know, sending them up and down and up and down. And if, you know, I'm a trade partner, I'm looking at this going, okay, well, what do I want from the Bruins roster that's going to be of some value to me? And I think that is where they're at a big crossroads at this point, because what is it going to take to get someone to solidify at least two lines? Because honestly, guys, if they said 2 weeks for Pasta, I'm thinking 4 to 6 weeks, and that's a big problem. That is a serious problem.
All right, appreciate the call, Maria. I mean, look, I think Don Sweeney, obviously, as Ty, you mentioned earlier, every, you know, prospect that they've brought up has not exactly fulfilled their potential to this point. I would tell Maria, hold off on that frustration until next Monday.
Why?
Well, next Monday at 3 p.m., if they have not significantly upgraded their team, then you have every right to be frustrated.
I think the I think you'd be frustrated now. I really do.
I don't.
You can't have an off season in a season that's worse for Don Sweeney. This is where they go. Their fourth highest point guy is David Krejci at 47 points. The next closest winger is Jake DeBrusk at 23 points. Mm-hmm. That is a 24-point difference,
and I would tell you, basically, come all this week. And I would tell you that when we started this show this season back in September, I was excited about the fact that they had not gone out and done anything significant in that offseason. I know they tried to, you know, they were in on Tavares and they were in on Kovalchuk and all that, and that would have been great if they landed one of those guys, not the guy that landed out west. But I looked at that and said, I'm fine with that. You know what? Shoot for the big fish, and if you don't get it, I want to see the kids play. I want to see what these guys have, because some of them showed a great, you know, look, for a good chunk of the season last year, I know there were down stretches. Heinen showed a lot of promise. DeBrusk showed a lot of promise. And, you know, I was okay with, let's give JFK a shot. Let's give Frederick a shot. That's like, I'm good with that. Now you've got a chance to see what some of these guys have to offer in the early portion of their career, and now you can judge whether you really needed help or not. And it turns out, yeah, they really do need help. And now's the time to go and get that help, because you have a better sense of what these guys are. And so it would be hypocritical of me to sit here months later and say, how could they not have gone out this summer and taken care of those needs? Like, we knew those needs were there. The hope was they could fill it internally. They haven't been able to do that, so now you go outside and do it.
Yeah, I just think that you knew this was coming, though. Like, as Maria said, last year they lose in five to Tampa, and they go, oh, we're too top-heavy. And they add Joakim Nordstrom and Chris Wagner. And I think Wagner's been great, and Nordstrom's been good as a role player. But that didn't solve any of your issues. So to sit here and go, gee, I wonder why Krejci's line has been a mess this year, or I wonder why the third line hasn't been good. It's ridiculous. You knew this was coming. You saw this in training camp when Frederick, Forsbacka Carlson, and Studnicka, none of them grabbed the open job there. And then you look at the second line, nobody grabbed that job either. And it's now February, 2 weeks away from the deadline, where prices are now high because everyone's a buyer and there are very few sellers. So now you have to pay even more, and the value of the prospects that no showed in September and have been even worse in the season has gone down. Nothing Don Sweeney has done this year has helped him, in my opinion. There's nothing that he's done. Like, those surpluses that I talked about, they haven't maximized them.
Okay, but his team's also got the third best record in the Eastern Conference, essentially.
And
right?
that's annoying to me because it shows that this team could be even better. Like,
well,
this team
and
could
by
be a
next
lot better.
Tuesday, they may be a whole lot better.
I mean, maybe.
You got to give him the opportunity to do his job.
He's too afraid to lose a trade. He's terrified to lose a trade because that's how he got his job. Which really lost so many trades and made so many bad moves and lost out on kids that ended up being good that now Sweeney and the Bruins are forever afraid to move anything that they think could maybe someday be of value.
Let's go to Matt. You're up next here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
Yeah, hi, guys. How are you?
Good.
Yeah, just right along the lines of what you're talking about. You mentioned DeBrusk and Heinen, and you can throw in a couple of other guys, maybe Donato. These were all guys that we were watching to see how they would develop this year. And, you know, it's great that Heinen's playing better. I mean, I love his game overall. I really do. But I kind of see both him and DeBrusk as essentially really strong third-line players right now, frankly, and they have to have, in the case of Heinen, that he has to have Bergeron and Marchand with him to look good right now anyway. And DeBrusk, frankly, has to have Krejci with him to look good. So they need, in those two slots, they need guys who can perform and score regardless of who they're playing with and create their shot and so forth. And so it's a critical time, like you said, for Sweeney. He has to be 100% sure that not one but both of those slots are going to turn into, you know, both those guys are going to turn into that kind of player. And if he doesn't 100% believe that, you should move them both, or at least one of them, in the next little while. Thanks.
Well, that'll depend on, again, what you're able to get back. I mean, you're talking about having to beef up your wing position. Trading a wing to get a wing is not necessarily the ideal thing that you're looking to do there. But again, look, not to pick on it, you know, any one of those guys specifically, but if you went into the year and told me that, you know, Danton Heinen, 16 goals and 47 points last year, is going to be sub 20 points in mid-February, I'd be like, well, that's a significant step back. He has the expectations for him were way bigger than he has been able to meet this year. I like his game too, but if he's not going to score consistently the way he did last year, if he's not going to put points up consistently the way he did last year, he's not nearly as big of a chip for you. You know, Jake DeBrusk is, you know, quietly, he's got 16 goals. I mean, you know,
playing on his off wing.
Playing on his off wing most of the year. And you can, you know, say, well, that's, you know, large part playing alongside Krejci. Again, I think Jake DeBrusk has a chance to be a really good player. You know, he's just gone through some significant droughts this year. But if you go back to the beginning of the year, even David Krejci said, well, that's, you know, that's partially on me. Like, he took ownership of that and said, I got to help make this kid better because he's a young guy. He's still trying to figure it out. You know, if these guys were 5 years into their NHL career and they're going through a year like this, it's like, okay, maybe it's time to move on. But look, they both made big splashes in their rookie years, and now they've kind of taken a little bit of a step back. You have to give them an opportunity to play their way out of that. Hopefully that's what we're seeing out of these guys, especially Heinen lately, is that given the opportunity to play with Bergeron and Marchand is kind of waking him up offensively a little bit. And then once they get Pastrnak back healthy, once they maybe add a piece, that he slots into where he should, and you know, maybe he's a different guy. Maybe he's the guy who's generating the offense as opposed to the guy who's just having stuff fed to him.
Yeah, and I would say this. I mean, I think the Heinen-Krejci-DeBrusk line has been pretty good this year. Like, when it hasn't been excellent, but it's been passable, in my opinion. So maybe, you know, you eventually work him back down there if you have to. To your point, I think DeBrusk is, when you look at the trade deadline coming up and you look at the pieces they have, what they could move, DeBrusk is like the one piece out of that group of Heinen, Donato, DeBrusk, and Anders Bjork, if you want to include him, Solarik, if you want to include him. DeBrusk is the one piece that I don't move because I just think that he's a guy, he's shown that he can score in the postseason. You need more of those players, in my opinion. He knows, you know, the big moments.
He can play on both sides. Like, the versatility factor enters into it. Like,
And he's gotten better at his defensive game, which I think is kind of flies under the radar. They've worked him into the PK a little bit this year at times. So that's the player that I don't move. Even if it's like for Panarin, I'm just like, I don't want to do this because I just think the ceiling is higher for him. I really think he can be a 25-goal guy. I mean, not your standard kind of 25-goal scorer, but I think he has it in him eventually to be that guy.
All right, let's get Sports Hub headlines here. Judd Surratt will join us coming up after the break. It's Ryan Johnston and Ty Anderson with you on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
Get in on the discussion. 617-779-0985. The Sports Hub Hockey Show on 98.5. The Sports Hub.
It's the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Ryan Johnston and Ty Anderson here this week in the Town Fair Tire Studios. The Bruins on the longest road trip of their season. Not sure if that's in mileage or just time, but...
Could be both, actually.
Could very well be. Well, I guess that doesn't count the trip to China, right?
No.
Judd Surratt is with us now, bright and early out there in the greater Los Angeles area where the Bruins played Anaheim last night. We'll play the LA Kings tonight. He joins us now on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. Good morning, Judd.
Good morning. I think it's the 12 days, but I can tell you that trip to China, that flight, that was long, baby.
That flight felt like it took 12 days. Let's talk a little bit about the game last night. You know, obviously a late night, so a lot of our listeners this morning may not have made it all the way to the end. But to me, it felt like, you know, you're playing a bad team. Obviously, Anaheim is not at a real great game. You're without one of your top stars. You know, your team's been on a little bit of a roll. You go in there, you get an early lead, and you play a very just kind of quiet, take care of business road game. Is that what it felt like?
Well, I think they played to their identity. I think they got off to a good start. I thought Anaheim actually came out with a little bit more energy and pace, certainly that I think a lot of people had seen from the Ducks here in the last couple of weeks, and certainly from the game that they shut out the Vancouver Canucks a couple of days before under the new interim head coach and the general manager, Bob Murray. But I think the Achari line set the tempo. Bruins got off to a great start. They had some problems with puck management in the latter half of that first period. You got some really timely saves from Yaroslav Halak. But again, special teams was excellent. You get a key power play goal from Jake DeBrusk. The penalty kill came up with some key kills at key times. You know, and I think watching the game up top, the way that they finished, they started that third period. I want to say they outshot the Ducks 8-1, and certainly here over the last, I don't know, couple of weeks, the Bruins have had some problems squelching leads, squelching teams that are trying to come back. When the Bruins have some leads in the third period, they did an outstanding job finishing the game, and I thought it was fitting that Chris Wagner iced it.
So, you know, they're playing without David Pastrnak, and yet things kind of keep rolling right along. We saw them put up, you know, a nice set of goals against Chicago the other night. They put up three goals last night. Power play gets involved again without Pastrnak. We saw them earlier this year go through a stretch where they didn't have Chara, they didn't have Bergeron. I mean, how and they played really well, and they had a lot of success in that time. How do you think they've weathered the storm through what are very significant injuries that sometimes might send some teams into the tank for a few weeks?
Well, I think, you know, you're talking about, you know, a couple of different guys that are injured. You know, I think the fact that they were able to go through it early in the season, missing all those defensemen, that was really hard. I think that that's hard for a lot of teams to be able to absorb. You know, last year, if you remember, when the Bruins went through most of their injury problems, their defense was essentially healthy, and it was the forwards who were down when you were missing a number of key guys up front. So I think that that was masterful. And the Bruins, listen, during that stretch, and maybe even during this stretch too, playing to their identity, great goaltending. We are a strong defensive team. You know, that's essentially their mantra inside that room. Be solid on special teams. I think that that has been key during this stretch. David Krejci's filled in almost seamlessly here on the power play with David Pastrnak out of the lineup because he essentially plays that spot. But as Bruce Cassidy talked about, you know, we can't have them both out there in the same position on the same power play. So Krejci was left to drive that second power play unit. But I think that's been a big part of it. And here, maybe last year, and then looking ahead right now, to what's going on with the Bruins at this point in the season,
some young players that they were counting on to drive the team now, I think, maybe feel as comfortable as they've felt all season long, and you're seeing some production and wins as a result.
Judd, you talked in the beginning about the Crowley lines setting the tone, if you will. You're seeing Cassie sort of utilize this line as more of a shutdown line. Do you think that that trio can keep it up and really be almost like that shutdown line for this team that they need if they're going to win these games 2-1?
Well, Ty, I think that they've sort of developed into that role here over the last month or so. And it's been an organic process because, as Cassidy had talked about, when Chris Wagner joined the team, okay, where does he best fit? They had him playing a lot of the offside. Who is the best centerman on that group? And I think what he found out is that he likes him on the right side and he likes him with Sean Corrali. Okay, and then you go throughout the course of the season, I think you've seen Cassidy organically find out, you know what, I kind of like Corrali on the left side and occasionally at center if we need him. Let's put Noel in the middle with that group. And I think Achari here over the last month or so is starting to play his best hockey. I thought he was a dominant player in last night's game. He could have easily had two or three goals in last night's game. And go back to the game against the Blackhawks. He was masterful against Patrick Kane and that line. Gave him a punishing, clean check. You rarely see that against a guy like Kane. And cranked one off the crossbar. So I think that that group, much like the group that last year had Tim Schaller on it and had a different combination, when you look at that threesome that Bruce Cassidy employed last year, they were able to flip the zone, take a lot of key D-zone draws, and match up against a lot of top-end lines. So they were terrific. And here of late, if you notice, Bruce Cassidy is starting that group to get his team off to the right tempo.
We've seen, over the last couple of weeks, Bruce Cassidy lashed out at his team a little bit, you know, talking about buy-in and talking about team defense and all of that. Last night, they get a shutout in front of Jaro Halak. He made 30 saves and, you know, not taking away from his performance, but I heard Bruce Cassidy after the game last night talking about, you know, the team defense has been really good, and he's been a lot happier with that. You know, we talked about the way that he approaches things and the way that he handles his players. And when he says something publicly like that, how it always seems to have the right impact, that he's got a real good read on what his guys need to hear and when.
Oh, he's such a good communicator. But you've also got great leadership. And it was fascinating talking with the general manager of the Ducks yesterday, just how much he was impressed with the Bruins' leadership and the type of environment that's been created. Bob Murray had a chance to watch the Bruins practice the day before the game, and he loved the way Chara, Bergeron, Marchand, some of the other veterans, Torrey Krug, Kevin Miller, the way that they were able to push the environment in practice and help bring along young players. That's what Anaheim is hoping that they can create in their room. But I think that you've got a guy who's got a real good sense of the temperature in the room and what his roster's like, and a good communicator in Bruce Cassidy, and you've got a terrific high character core for the Boston Bruins. Since you kind of touched on the shutout, I thought Jaroslav Halak looked very reminiscent of what we saw early in the season. Bruins definitely played well in front of him. They gave him an opportunity to see some shots or clear some rebounds. But I thought he did a better job overall, and he's not the biggest guy, of fighting through screens, fighting through some traffic to see some pucks, stop them, and his rebound control was excellent last night.
Well, two of the guys who they needed to have step up in the absence of Pastrnak are Danton Heinen and Jake DeBrusk. Obviously, especially Heinen, you know, as they were shuffling lines before the Pastrnak injury, getting the opportunity to play with Bergeron, he's kind of come alive offensively. DeBrusk, I think, it's 4 points in the last couple of games. Do you feel like for both of those guys, especially at this early, still pretty early stage of their careers, it's about confidence as much as it is anything else?
Oh, I think it's a big part of it. You know, I mean, if you talk to him, and I'm sure you guys have read the comments, that if you talk to Jake, that, you know, he was worried about the scoring slump getting into his head, and Danton Heinen saying, you know what, I'm trying not to think too much and just trying to play on instinct. So I think that those 6 inches between their ears are probably a big difference. And I think they are for a lot of players, not just young players. The confidence that guys either have or do not have when they play on the ice. But I think for Jake, he had his legs going. He was going to the right spots. And I think for Danton Heinen, Patrice Bergeron mentioned this the other day, I think he is finally getting rewarded for doing the right things, and he does them a lot of times. He's got a great stick. He's got a high hockey IQ. He's willing to go to the hard areas, and he's responsible defensively. I think the only thing that he had been missing this year was finishing, and now he's starting to do that.
All right, Judd Surratt, getting up early out there in California. Appreciate the time, and enjoy another late night tonight.
All right, you got it, boys. Take care.
He joins us on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. He and Bob Beers, of course, will have the call of the action tonight as the Bruins take on the LA Kings. 10:30 start time tonight, 10 o'clock pregame show here on 98.5 The Sports Hub. We will continue. We got Ty Anderson in studio with me this week. We can get to more of your calls coming up. We also have Bob Beers going to join us in the 10 o'clock hour, and Billy Jaffe, hopefully in his final segment, in our final segment. Not
I was
going
to say, whoa.
Not his
whoa,
final.
Whoa.
Sorry to break it to you, Billy. We're all, yeah. No, in our final segment of the day today after 10:30, it is the Hockey Show here on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
This is where Boston talks hockey. The Sports Hub Hockey Show on the home of the Bees. 98.5 The Sports Hub.
.5 The Sports Hub. The Sports Hub Hockey Show. Ryan Johnston and Ty Anderson with you here on this Saturday morning. 617-779-0985. We'll talk to Bob Beers coming up in a few minutes from out in L.A. It's the Bruins and Kings will match up tonight. You know, we talked a little bit earlier about, you know, the Pasternak injury and the trade deadline, but not necessarily together. Do you think one impacts the other? Do you think, Don Sweeney said his focus is where it is, and, you know, it's not, the Pasternak injury doesn't change that. Look, as we said, they've won with him, they've won without him. They've won without Bergeron, they've won without Chara, they've won without pretty much everybody on this roster. But they still have holes. Do you think the Pasternak injury timing, whether Don Sweeney wants to say it or not, impacts maybe the way other teams look at the Bruins and say, well, if they were going to be desperate before to make a deal, they're really going to be desperate now for him to be out for any significant length of time. You know, they're looking at it the same way that we do is, 2 weeks to be reevaluated doesn't mean he's back, you know, right after the trade deadline. It means you got at least another couple of weeks to go before that. So now you're well into March and, you know, there's only about a month left to go in the season and maybe he's back at that point. So if you're another team, does the Pasternak injury coming as when it does impact your business dealings with the Bruins at all and thinking that Don Sweeney might be really needing to make a deal?
I mean, it could. He has to prove that it doesn't. You know, it's one of those things where teams are always going to come at you and say, we want your top prospect here, your top prospect there. Oh, and we want a first-round pick. It's about showing the wherewithal to say, no, we're not doing that. And you outweigh the other team. The problem is that the Bruins, you know, the players they want, other teams want them too. You know, like Winnipeg, like the Bruins have been hot for a center all year. The name I keep hearing is Kevin Hayes. Like that Kevin Hayes is the guy for them. Like mm-hmm. and people close to Hayes himself think that he's bound for Boston. And I hear Winnipeg also wants Kevin Hayes as well. You know, like it's one of those things where, you know, you really like I've spent a lot of the show hammering Don Sweeney, and you know, those are for moves he didn't make in the summer and earlier this season. I'm not gonna kill him right now for not saying, okay, well, Pasternak's hurt, 24 hours later, let me go overspend on a stopgap winger or a stopgap center. Like, so no, I think that teams could try it, but I think that Sweeney has to show that he's experienced on the job enough to where he doesn't lose a trade based on an injury. You know, that's another part of his sort of test here that we're talking about, with this being an important stretch for him. He has to make sure that he doesn't lose, like, a real hockey trade. If he's going to make a big hockey trade, which is what I think the Bruins are going to do, I think the Bruins are swinging big for this deadline. They have to make sure it actually works, and it's not just reactionary, if you will. I think last year was a little reactionary in terms of getting Tommy Wingles and Brian Gionta. Like, some of these guys, I was like, wait a minute, what are we doing here? Like, you have Anton Bleed in the minors. You don't need Tommy Wingles. You know, it's like, so some odd moves there. But I think, you know, that's why these next few weeks are so important for him.
Well, to that end, by the way, if you missed it this week, Lee Stempniak is now officially a Providence Bruin.
Yeah, finally. Again. I mean, he's been skating with the Bruins since September. Like,
right.
I've never seen this in all my life of just like, okay, he's still here. Wow, he hasn't gone home yet. It's like the friend who like sleeps over from like Thursday to Sunday. And Sunday you're like, hey, can you go home? Like, can you just go away now? Like, I have to live here.
Well, no. Instead, they put him on the lease. So he's going to be sticking around for a little while. All right. We will talk with Bob Beers from out in Los Angeles coming up next, and we'll get to your phone calls on the way as well, of course, obviously. 617-779-0985. It is the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
This is the Sports Hub Hockey Show with Ryan Johnston, Judd Zerah, and Bob Beers on the home of the Bees. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Hour number two of the Sports Hub Hockey Show here on a Saturday morning from our Town Fair Tire Studios. Ryan Johnston joined by Ty Anderson of 98.5thesportshub.com this morning. We can get to more of your calls coming up in just a bit at 617-779-0985. But we're going to go back out to L.A. where Bob Beers joins us on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline this morning. Morning, Beersy.
Morning, guys. How are we doing?
Good. So, in four straight wins for this team, in the middle, obviously, you know, they lose David Pastrnak for, you know, at least for a few weeks going forward, but they have managed to, you know, to keep things going. The power play is still chipping in goals, even without one of its top guns. The offense has put up, you know, it puts up a significant number against Chicago, especially the other night. I asked Judd this, and I'll ask you this, especially offensively. How do they keep this going, and how have they been able to fight through this injury over the first couple of games in particular?
It looks like they've elevated their forecheck a little bit. You know, they've made sure that they've kind of simplified certain areas, make sure the puck is behind the defense, get in there quickly on the forecheck. You know, I think, you know, when you see the Achari line, I think that's a great example. You know, a line that keeps it simple, and they work extremely hard, and they can hem teams in just by getting in there on the forecheck and you know, putting the defenseman back up against the glass a little bit. I think that part of it has been real good. The D getting involved, being active, trying to get shots through from the point has been another improvement here recently. You know, you've had goals scored in different ways. You know, the Chicago game, there was some real nice goals, you know, some tic-tac-toe plays. You know, last night you see a nice tip in from Achari right at the, you know, top of the blue paint. You know, you get the power play goal. The power play is a big weapon for you. Always has been. And all season long, it's been a big weapon for you because the 5-on-5 scoring hasn't been quite where you wanted it to be. You know, and you get the timely saves. I mean, let's face it, there were some good saves last night made by Halak, and he's had a couple of real good games in a row. And, you know, it's been a good formula for them. You know, they believe in themselves, and I think that's showing right now. They're playing some pretty good hockey. There's some breakdowns here and there, but that's going to happen. And, you know, whether guys come across and, you know, make a play defensively, or whether your goaltender comes up with a big save to keep the score where it is, you know, that's been a big factor as well.
There are some around here who have been down on David Krejci in the last few years, and, you know, we've talked about that to death, but how much do you feel like he's elevated his game this year? Because, look, he's on pace for, one of his best seasons statistically in probably 5 or 6 years. But I'm interested to see what you have seen out of him on a nightly basis. And, you know, is he doing anything differently? Is he more consistent this year? What is it about him that seems to be standing out more?
Hard to put a finger on it, really, Ryan. But I think it's really impressive, you know, due to the fact that, you know, he's had a revolving door of wingers over, you know, that have played with him this year. And even Jake DeBrusk, who's had, you know, he's got 16 goals now, which matches last season, but he's gone through some ups and downs during the year as well. So, you know, it's been a challenge that way. He doesn't get first power play time. He is now, of course, with Pasternak out. So he gets the second power play time most of the time. He doesn't start on the power play. It's been really impressive what he's been able to do this year. You know, he stepped in and played when Bergeron was hurt, and that line can continue to produce the way that you kind of expect them to. So I think David Krejci's year has been extremely impressive. He's been healthy. I think that's a big thing as well. You know, he's fought some nagging injuries over the last couple of seasons. So, you know, I think the big thing with David has always been, you know, do you play? He likes to slow things down. But in order to slow things down, you have to start at a faster speed. Then you can slow things down and let everybody kind of go by you and make plays coming into the zone. That's something he's really effective at, you know, especially off the rush. It's all been there for him. In the beginning of the season, it was more the assists that were coming and not so much the goals. Now we're seeing some of the goals as well. So, I've been really impressed with David Krejci, and he's a guy that competes. You know, I'm sure he heard some of the things. In fact, I know he did. I mean, you know, he can tell, you know, some of the things that he had to say, that he heard some of the things that were being said as well. And, you know, proud player, proud guy, a guy that's been here for a long time and has produced for a long time. You know, he wanted to make sure that he was doing his part. And I think some of his words earlier in the season were, you know, when guys around him weren't producing, you know, he took it upon himself to say, some of this is on me. You know, I've got to be better. So, and he has. So, I enjoy watching him play. You know, when he's really on his game, he's a fun player to watch because he sees the ice so well. He makes great plays. He's got soft hands. He can get the puck into areas that maybe other guys can't get. He makes people around him better by, you know, making some of those passes. And when the wingers are on around him, you know, that can be a really effective line.
Bobby, you're talking about the power play and what they've been able to do, but it seems that the PK has sort of settled into a little bit of a groove here. What do you think has been the big difference for that unit?
Yeah, they were in a real groove, and then they dipped a little bit. Now they're kind of coming back again and gotten some key kills at good times. They've talked about being more aggressive on the penalty kill, trying to really jump on teams, you know, especially, like, it's the rule of thumb usually is if you see a player's numbers or if you see them fumble the puck a little bit, that's when you're really jumping. You're going right away. And then if the first guy jumps, you know, if the forward jumps at, if a defenseman jumps at the guy at the half wall, okay, where's the puck going to go? It's probably either going to go down low or it's going to go out high to the point, maybe into the bumper, but the next guy is ready to jump in. He's anticipating where that puck's going to go. So they've been more aggressive, a little bit up the ice as well. So I think that's helped them. You know, they did fall back a little bit, you know, timing-wise, I think a couple of weeks ago, but now they seem to have it back. And that penalty kill can be critical at big at critical times of games. And then you need the big save. You know, I kind of keep going back to that. But that save made, that Halak made on, I think it was Montour last night, kind of jumping into the left wing circle. It was a seam pass that got through over there. You know, that puck goes in. Now it's 2-1 with, you know, 6-7 minutes ago or whatever the time was on the clock. And it's a different type of mindset in that game. He comes up with a save, diffuses the whole situation, and things kind of calm down. He made a couple saves on one-timers in the second period as well. So, you know, your goaltender's got to be good in those situations. The puck's got to be cleared when you have the opportunity. I think that's still a work in progress for some guys where they get possession, but, you know, they have a little trouble clearing. It's not always easy. You're under pressure. Utilize the middle of the ice in scrums because, you know, on a power play situation, you're trying to outnumber the other team. So there's pucks in the corner. You're going to even have three forwards over there in the corner. You know, the Bruins or the defensive team is trying to win a battle. The open part of the ice is the middle, and that weak side winger can come down and be the outlet there. And if you win a battle, you know, you move that puck to the winger, and he's got all kinds of time and space to clear the puck. So there's, you know, intelligent plays as well that go along with it.
Talking to Bob Beers, who, of course, will be on the call along with Judd Surratt tonight when the Bruins take on the LA Kings. We've talked a lot this morning, obviously, about the Pastrnak injury, and injuries are going to happen, and teams deal with them all the time, and certainly this team has had its share and probably a couple of other team shares, it feels like, this year. But this one's different in that it happens off the ice. From a player's perspective, and we don't know the entire story about, you know, what exactly happened last Sunday, and, you know, probably not going to know. But from a player's perspective, you know, for one of your top players to get injured in something that happens away from the ice, how does the team deal with that? And, you know, and does it at all alter the way that some of those guys are going to look at David Pastrnak going forward? Or, you know, even does it alter the way that he feels when he comes back, that he feels like he has to make something up to his teammates? Do you have any sense of that dynamic?
Well, on the last part of it, of what he feels, I mean, I can only imagine that, you know, he's not real happy with himself right now. Whatever happened, I don't know.
Sure.
But I don't think, you know, so I can't answer that. That's got to come from within. But, you know, I think from a teammate's perspective, you see somebody that's so respected, somebody that's done what he's been able to do this year, you know, at different times of the season offensively to help carry this team, and how popular he is among his teammates. I can only see it maybe, you know, galvanizing guys and saying, we got to pick up for this guy until he can get back. That's the way I see it. I mean, he's such an immensely popular person in that room and on that team, and he's an important part of the team. They all know what he means to them. And, you know, I think it kind of goes in a positive way. Now, that being said, you lose a player like that, it's not easy to sustain, you know, continued winning. At some point, you know, you're going to miss that scoring. You're going to miss that type of play. And, you know, you hope that it doesn't come too soon. You hope he's able to get back in the lineup before that catches up to you, because you lose good players like that, it does catch up to you at some point. You know, we all talked about when guys went down, when Bergeron and Char and other players went down, you know, try to maintain, try to be around 500 or so. You know, they were able to do that, maybe a little bit more. So I thought that was, you know, that kind of showed some of the character that the team has. And I think you're seeing that again here with Pastrnak down and out. And I think that, in my opinion, they want to win for him until he can get back there, and he'll be, you know, maybe they'll be a better team for it. But it can't last too long, if you know what I'm saying.
Sure.
You can't, that's a tough guy to lose for a long period of time, especially when the games get, you know, tighter and the playoffs come around and you're playing that really good team, you know, night after night after night.
Just from the other perspective of that too, is when he does come back I would assume there would be some concern about, is he the same guy? I mean, you're talking about a guy, as I was saying this earlier, this is a guy who's, you know, he's a shooter, he's a stick handler, he's a, you know, he's a skilled guy who's now got an issue with the thumb. So what kind of impact might that have on his game if he's not necessarily 100% when he does come back?
Again, hard to say. It's his left thumb, correct?
And, you're right.
If I'm not mistaken, so that's his top hand. He's a right hand shot. One timer wise, there's, you know, where he's been so good at and handling the puck. You know, that top hand, if he's going in and he's battling for pucks, you know, if he's got one hand on his stick, that's the hand that's going to be on his stick, right? I mean, one timer wise, you know, a lot of the pressure is coming from the lower hand. So, you know, there's different ways to kind of look at it and what he might be dealing with when he comes back. I can't answer that. I never had that injury. The one thing that he's going to be able to do, and they mentioned this, is to be able to continue to skate. You know, he won't be able to handle puck or shoot or things like that for whatever, a couple of weeks. But I don't know when he starts to skate. I don't know when that's going to happen. But, you know, when you have a lower body injury and then you come back and you try to start skate, you're off the ice for a while before you can come back and start to skate. And this is something where he can at least keep the skating legs under him by being on the ice, even with, you know, the hand injury. So I guess there's a couple different ways to look at it, but the severity of the injury and how it affects him when he comes back, you know, it's hard really to say that right now and how that might affect him.
All right, Bob, we'll let you go on that. Appreciate the time this morning, and enjoy the rest of your trip. We'll talk to you next Saturday.
Okay, guys. Thank you.
There's Bob Beers joining us on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. Just trying to kind of get that perspective of, I mean, for those of us who, you know, never played the game at a high level, what an injury like that might mean just in the sheer matter of, do you have the same grip on the stick, right? Are you still able to be strong on the puck? Things like that that we don't necessarily
the most important get to experience. Thing, the most important thing for Pastrnak is, can he load up that one-time bomb on the power play? Because this team needs that. You know, like, they've done a great job here, getting some points, winning some games, beating some teams they should beat. But, man, you need that shot on the power play. It is so effective. It is Ovechkin, Stamkos, Line A. You know, like, it is that impactful for this team. Like, that's why, like, they need, when he's back, they need to make sure that he is as close to 100% as he possibly can be. Because, again, look what we did in the postseason last year. Like, he basically won you round one against the Maple Leafs.
Yeah.
And you need a similar impact from him if you don't get that big deadline catch, which is entirely possible at this point.
All right, well, we can talk more about the trade deadline. We can talk more about what's going on with the team right now. Your calls next, 617-779-0985.
The Bruins, the NHL. This is the show that's all hockey.
He scores!
The Sports Hub Hockey Show with Ryan Johnston, Judd Sirai, and Bob Beers. On 98.5, the Sports Hub.
The Sports Hub Hockey Show. Ryan Johnston and Ty Anderson with you here on this Saturday morning. Let's get some more of your calls here. We've got Chris in Plainville up first. Hey, Chris, good morning.
Good morning, guys. Good to have you on the show, Ty.
Yeah, thanks, Chris. Happy to be here.
Enjoy your work on Twitter.
Oh, yeah.
I'm following you.
Yeah, that's you're one of like six people. Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Yeah, that's not what I see out there. Hey, but anyways, guys, I don't think it's any small request that Halak has been asking the Bruins to help him see the puck better. Unless you're blocking shots out by the dots, or unless you're moving out people from in front of the net in general, Chara is especially guilty of this. He'll sit right in front of the goaltender, and the goaltender desperately trying. First of all, you can't even come out and cut down the angle as much. And he's desperately trying to see the shot, and first of all, you can't see around Chara, period. And you're doing nothing. You're doing no good by sitting right in front of the goalie there. You either pick some guy, move him out of the way, or let the goaltender see the shot. And I think that's something that could go a long way, because I've seen it before. I don't know what your take is on it. I'll just ask you that.
All right. Look, Halak is, he's a solid goalie. You know, he's going to give you a chance to win more often than not. I don't know what really changed about, you know, where he was in October, November versus where he was in December and January. And now, you know, he's kind of coming back into form again, closer to what he was at the beginning of the year, other than, you know, just started giving up soft goals. It didn't, you know, you can say, well, there's people in front of him. Well, yeah, it's the NHL. There's going to be people in front of the net more often than not. You're going to have to make those types of saves. He's let in some soft goals. Some of the goals that people would criticize Tuukka over the years for giving up, I think that's been the biggest difference in his play is, you know, the early part of the year, he was pretty much rock solid. In the middle part of the year, not so much. And now he's kind of, you know, last night he was great.
Yeah, and it's one of those things too where, you know, this is who he is. There's high highs and low lows. I've said this a bunch of times, and it's very true. Like, he's a guy who will have a 950 for a month, and then he'll have an 860. Like, that's why he's a backup. That's why he's
right.
Not
if
a starter.
He was more consistent,
exactly,
he would still be a starter in the NHL.
To Chris's point, though, one thing that I found interesting is Cassie after the game said he's tracking the puck well again. Talking about Halak, And I think that's 100% accurate. Like, you were seeing some of the goals he was surrendering. In Philadelphia, that start in particular, New York as well. Like, you look at some of the goals he gave up, you're like, did he see where that shot was going? Like, it didn't look like an NHL quality goal to give up. He was spinning, he was trying to find it, you know, whatever you want to call it. So I think, yes, there is an effort to make him be able, you know, let him see the puck, but that's the effort for every defense. Every defense wants to let their goaltender see the puck, see the shots coming in. I thought last night they were pretty good at that, which obviously helps him. But yeah, he is what he is, right? I think if you can trust him, though, this is going to be big. I talked about it earlier. Every other day, pretty much rest of the season, they're playing. Like, you need to be able to trust this goaltender, because if you don't, now you're playing Tuukka too many games. And now Tuukka's going to be a shell of himself come the first round. And we all know how badly that will hurt this team. We've seen it before, and you don't want that to happen again.
Yeah, I mean, Tuukka's played for his standards, a pretty light load to this point. But that doesn't mean you want him to play the last, 25 games in a row.
No, especially you look back at 2015 and 2016 when they didn't make the playoffs. You look at Rask's workload then. It was a lot. They didn't trust their backup. It was Svedberg 1 year, and it was Gustafsson the next year. And, you can bellyache about him, being sick on game 82 if you want, but if Jonas Gustafsson does his job that day, it's not on Tuukka Rask. It's just not. So they realize they need strong backup, strong play from their backup goaltender. And I think right now they're getting it. And as long as you get the points, that's all that really matters, man. You just need to get the points out of your backup. Like, that's something that Hudobin was good at. Even if he had a bad game, he would get you to overtime. You need at least that.
Well, and that's something that the team itself overall has been good at lately is, even in games where they're not playing well, they've got points in 9 straight games now, 3 overtime losses. They had that stretch at the beginning of this where it was like, overtime loss, shootout loss, and like, all right, they're getting a point here and there. Now it's like they've won 4 in a row, and now suddenly it's like, wow, they're 6-0-3 in the last 9 games.
Yeah,
like,
you don't feel good about a 1-0-3 point streak.
No.
You really can't. You're like, oh, this is great, I guess. I don't know.
Jay is in Boston. You're up next here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
Ryan, Ty, great show.
Thanks.
We got to remember we're playing kind of a weakened Western division. Okay, we're getting a lot of points for these guys. But I look at Don Sweeney as the guy here that can put us over the top. I think we're one player away. I really believe that. I think that if we could get some star player to play with Krejci in the second line, that might make all the difference. And you could throw in maybe a third line sign up too. But I really think they need like a real sniper second line player to go with Krejci for the playoffs I'm talking about now, assuming we're going to get Dastanak back for the first line. Now, who can that be? Who is out there that, you have to really sell the farm? I hate to do that, We tried it last year. It didn't work. Maybe this year it will work. We're so close. I feel this team is close. You got the goaltending. You got the defense. If they could win another cup and get some guy to bring him who really wants to get his name in the cup, who's desperate to get on the cup and we'll go all out, some super sniper, you got to give up a first round pick, some of these young guys, whatever it takes. Don Sweeney, Cam Neely, these guys, this brain trust has to think outside the box. They have to do what it takes to put us over the top. We're so close now. Tampa Bay, they look like a juggernaut, but they could be taken down. I really believe this team can do it.
Appreciate it, Jay. I'm sorry to cut you off. All right. Do you have somebody in mind?
I do.
Do you?
Yeah.
Who is it?
Mark Stone.
See, that's a name that comes up a lot on this show. I know it's somebody that Jaffe is interested in, that Bob Beers has mentioned his name. Like,
possession winger.
Yeah.
Right shot, right winger. 20 goals in 5 straight seasons. That Ottawa team went to the Eastern Conference Finals, Game 7.
See, that's not a sexy name like Panarin or Simmons or some of the people that, that the fans around here are thirsting for, but it's a good, solid...
It's a real good option. Like,
yeah.
Like, I love Panarin. Panarin's unbelievable. But, again, like, he's a natural left winger. You kind of already have that. Like, you need to fortify the right side. Like, that is number one on this list, in my opinion. Like... Because I said it on Twitter, we talked about it, but if you look at this roster right now, it's David Pastrnak at the top, and then your second natural right winger is David Backes. Like, that is scary. That is scary to think about.
See, Jay also said, maybe a third. You need a third liner.
Yes.
You need it. I mean, look, I'm not sure if it was you or somebody else who said, like, I can't even consider this the third line if they're only playing 9 minutes a night.
Yeah, that was me. Yeah, it was Trent Frederick. He played 10 minutes and 25 seconds last night.
Like,
awesome.
Frederick, and look, nothing against Trent Frederick. We just haven't seen a lot of him. But Frederick, Backes, Nordstrom, like some combination of those, it's like they're not getting much accomplished. Like, I can look at what is considered the fourth line and say, that's an important part of your team. They're playing an important role in your team. Obviously, the Bergeron line is important. Obviously, the Krejci line, whatever that looks like on any given night, is important. In the middle there, you've got this group of, you know, of players that you just kind of shuttle guys in and out of there, and there's no real rhyme or reason to it. And from night to night, they're not getting a whole lot done. They're not bringing a lot to the table. You have to fix that. You can't go into the playoffs with a hole in a quarter of your forward lineup. You can't do that.
No, you can't. And it's one of those things where, you know, you need a third line center who has a little bit of offensive pop, because that will allow you to bring the best out of Danton Heinen when Pastrnak comes back, and you want to slot Heinen down, or you want to elevate Nordstrom, elevate DeBrusque, elevate whoever. You need to have someone there. And I come back to, okay, well, who's manning the middle of that third line? Mm-hmm. It's been Nordstrom. It's been Forsbacka Carlson. You go down the list. Achari's had some time there. Corrales had some time there. These aren't natural pass-first kind of centers that are going to elevate a goal scorer, if you will. So I look at some options out there. Derek Brassard is interesting to me because he's with the Panthers. The Panthers are going to be selling. They're trying to clear roster space and cap space for the summer. Brassard has had some playoff success with the Rangers and with the Penguins and with the Senators. Like, this is a guy that I could see as a fit there, and he might not be the most expensive because he's had kind of a down year. So you need to get these two things.
You mentioned Kevin Hayes' name earlier, too. We'll ask Billy Jaffe about him coming up, because he's going to join us in the final segment of the show today. That is next, 617-779-0985. Matt McCarthy's got Sports Hub headlines. And then we talk with Billy Jaffe around the NHL next.
Get in on the discussion, 617-779-0985. The Sports Hub Hockey Show, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
The Sports Hub. It's the Hockey Show. Ryan Johnston and Ty Anderson with you here in the Town Fair Tire Studios this week. And now back out to the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline, where Nesson's Billy Jaffe joins us to go around the NHL, and he is with us now. Good morning, Billy.
Hello. Good morning. Good morning, RJ, Ty. How's everybody today?
Good. Travels go okay this morning and everything good?
You haven't lived until you spent the night in Kalamazoo, make your way to Detroit, and catch the 7 a.m. to Boston. Yes, they went just fine, thank you. But a good time. Just did the North Dakota at Western Michigan game. The Fighting Hawks. The nice. Fighting Hawks took on the Broncos. And the Fighting Hawks, let's just say, absolutely vultured, if that makes sense, the Broncos. They nipped at them all. They thrashed them.
Second prize is two nights in Kalamazoo. One of those kind of trips.
Yeah, exactly. Actually, I kind of had the trifecta. You ready for this? I started in Cleveland. I mean, what good trip doesn't start in Cleveland? Moved to Kalamazoo just for kind of that urban oasis feel. And then I found myself at the Detroit airport, the Westin Hotel there, which is actually kind of a mirage unto itself. It's a fantastic hotel. You can walk right out, throw your hat on, and walk right into the terminal. So that's maybe the highlight. But great trip. Look, I love doing the college hockey. It was fun to be a part of it.
All right, well, let's talk about some NHL hockey. We got a late-night trade last night, Billy. Trade deadline is 9 days away. The Flyers and Oilers swapped goaltenders last night. Cam Talbot coming to Philadelphia, and Anthony Stolarz headed out to Edmonton. What do you think of this move for both of these teams, especially Philly, who's got Carter Hart, and, you know, that's a red-hot team right now, but adding a little bit of experience to a team that has gone through it will be official by the time that Talbot plays, a record number of goaltenders this year.
Yeah, they needed the experience there. Now you could argue that Cam Talbot lately hasn't really shown great experience. He struggled mightily this year, but that team in Edmonton is a dumpster fire again. It's amazing. You say that, and you have arguably the best player in the entire universe playing for that team, and yet they're just a mess. Keith Gretzky's in charge of the team right now after Peter Chiarelli was fired. He had to move some salary. Had to. They've got Andre Sekera, or Sekera, however he's pronouncing his last name now, coming back from an injury and trying to get him back in the lineup, and they need cap space. And they're able to move salary by moving Cam Talbot to Philly. Now, Philly gets a guy to help mentor, and he knows, Cam Talbot knows Carter Hart. So, you know, he gets to help mentor Carter Hart a little bit. And be there, and basically Philly gets, or Edmonton gets some cap relief. You know, Stolarz, the goalie that you mentioned that went the other way, is going to be what's called the Group 6 UFA at the end of this season. So they could sign, but he could also just go for nothing. Right now, Keith Gretzky, the interim GM for the Oilers, needs to create as much cap room as possible if they're going to fix this thing in Edmonton. And, you know, the other thing is Talbot for Philly, he's a UFA to be as well. He makes 4.2. So, but he'll be a UFA at the end of this season. So this really doesn't hurt them either. Look, it's a bonus if Philly makes the playoffs. That's the way I look at it right now. If they end up making it, I don't see them making it. If they do, great. If not, Hart gets great experience. Everybody feels better about the team. I'm still curious. I can't imagine that Philly doesn't make another move or two before the deadline.
Well, that was kind of going to be my next question was, look, obviously the Talbot move you would think is, you know, a move that they're hoping to keep him around for the future here, maybe. And
yeah, I don't know.
Well,
I
kind of looked at it as I thought maybe they were bringing him in as a, you know, as you said, as a mentor to Hart, but not just for the last, you know, 25 games of the year or so, but, you know, maybe to try and keep him around as a backup for the future.
Yeah, that could be something. That could be, I guess the question becomes, and this is so obvious, but I'll still say it, what other deals does Cam Talbot get? Unless Philly says, hey, we really like you. We'll give you a two-year deal, $2 million a year. That's a significant pay cut, but on the other hand, it's guaranteed contract, and you'll be here as a 35, maybe 40-game, probably 35-game guy. I mean, you don't want to overplay Carter Hart. This year for Carter Hart has obviously been wonderful, this run that Carter Hart is on. But let's not forget, this is a different scenario than coming in to start the year as the number one guy. He's played 18 games, I think it is, if my memory serves correct. I just looked at it a few minutes ago. 18 games for this Flyer team. It's a very different scenario, RJ and Ty, than if he comes in next year with the number one mantle on him. So, yeah, maybe Talbot says, okay, I'll take a lesser deal, but I know I got some guaranteed money coming in for a couple of years.
To that end, with the Flyers, one of the names that has been rumored all year long to be on the trading block is Wayne Simmonds. As you said, you don't see the Flyers making the playoffs. I mean, they're still 8 points out as they enter the play today. So it would take a pretty good effort, even as well as they've played lately, to get into the postseason. Do you still see Simmonds on the move before next Monday?
I do, because he has trade return value to Philadelphia. They're going to get something. I don't know about great for him, but I think they're going to get something. I think they're going to get something very good for him. And again, forgive me, I don't have my notes in front of me, but Simmonds' 5-on-5 scoring in the last year, his even strength goals have been, it's been down significantly. I still like Wayne. I do. But, I mean, I'm not giving up a lot to get him. He's a character guy. The way that guys described him to me, you know, I've always watched him, but when players tell you he's the kind of guy that brings you into the fight, he draws you into it, both literally and figuratively, both your team and the opponent's team. You know, you like that kind of gumption. You like that kind of strength. But when you talk about playoff time, does he bring you enough with regard to foot speed and with regard to enough even strength scoring? And that's where you have to understand that the value, you know, we need to go get that guy. You have to be really cautious about that. I do see him being traded, though, RJ. I just do. I think that there's a team out there, I think, that will give up something decent for him. If they get a first-round pick for that, that's off the charts. But if Brian Boyle gets a second, that's my guess. I mean, it for sure a second, or at least a very pretty good prospect for him.
All right, let's talk a little bit about the New York Islanders leading the Eastern Conference, or leading the Metropolitan Division, at least, coming into the day. They made a kind of an odd announcement yesterday about their home for the playoffs. They're going to play at the Nassau Coliseum in the first round but have agreed with the NHL that that is not appropriate to do that in any rounds beyond that. So they're going to play at the old barn for, you know, for the opening round of the playoffs. And then if they advance, they're going back to Brooklyn to play the rest of the playoffs. I know you know the Islanders organization. You've worked there. What the hell is this?
Well, okay. This is, look, there's definitely, if you want to talk about a complete stark contrast of a home ice advantage versus not one, it's these two places. Now, Barclays Center, the Islander fans, to their credit, as dysfunctional as an agreement as it has been at Barclays Center, and as difficult of a place it is to watch a game, I give them credit. A couple of years ago in the playoffs, they came out, they got their 13,000, whatever it is, 13,400, whatever, fit into that building at Barclays, and they made noise. But it just doesn't have the same vibe as the old Coliseum, which is still kind of, it's a cleaner dump is what it is. You know, they put some new seating and some paint. The foyer, I'm told the hallways or the concession areas are nicer. I haven't gone to a game there again, so I don't want to completely speak out of turn. I'm just going on what everybody's told me. But it's still basically the same thing, but just, it's a nicer same thing. But that's a home ice advantage there, RJ. So I get it. I get why they want to play the first round there. First round is always the most competitive. You know what I mean? The first round is where the crazy happens. So to me, I look at it as a bonus for the Islanders. They go home, they get the fans at least one round, and then if they advance, okay, it's a contractual thing. That's what this is. The Barclays Center, I think, is saying, hey, wait, we understand we wanted to get rid of you, but we still have a deal with you for this year, and we know you're going back to the island, but part of the deal is playoffs would be here. So we'll give you the first round, but after that, we'll take the money of the second and perhaps for future rounds.
Of course, it always comes down to the money.
Of course it does. You know that.
Of course. But like Ty and I were talking about this earlier. It's like, it feels like it's the exact opposite of what should happen. Right. I mean, like the more important the games get, the later on you get, those are the ones that should be played out on the island.
And especially with the fans love the Coliseum. They always have. They always will. You know, I mean, like, it's a dump, but it's their dump.
I know. I lived it. I get it. It is. It's awful. It's a wonderfully awful place. How's that? I understand. But Barclays, I think, is extending. This is my guess and my take. They're extending that. Listen, you're supposed to play all the playoff games here, but because of this cockamamie, you know, lease or deal that we've got going, we'll let you go play one round over there, but then the rest come back to us. It's just, listen, they brought it upon themselves. They couldn't figure out a deal on the island for years and years and years. They couldn't get it done with Charles Wong in charge because he wanted the earth, the sun, the moon, everything. You know, he wanted yours and Ty's firstborn, okay? That's what he wanted to make this deal happen, and he didn't get it. Then they have to go to Barclays to keep the team in New York. I don't need to go over the history of it. Long story short is Barclays, while it hasn't been a great deal for them, I think Barclays is just saying, look, we'll give you this, but we still want that. After this year, I think everything will be at the Coliseum until the new building on the island is built.
Billy, out in Minnesota, Paul Fenton has been given the green light to make trades. What does that mean for the Wild, and what does it mean for the rest of the league about who might be available?
Well, I don't think that there's anybody on that team that is untouchable. By the way, you know, since they made that Nino Niederreiter trade for Victor Rask, I mean, that was not a good first big deal. Niederreiter, like 8-4-2 or 8-4-3 in Carolina since El Nino swept into Hurricanes country. And Victor Rask is, I mean, they're like, I think they're 500, like, you know, 4-4 and whatever since he's been there. Minnesota is such a vanilla team. They're not even vanilla yogurt. They're plain yogurt to me, and that's what they've been for a while. They've got no flavor. And yes, I understand, I respect the hard work aspect, but you know what? They always talk about Devin Dubnyk and you know how great he is. Well, holy smokes, get the guy some help so you don't have to rely on him, because he hasn't been great this year. He's just been okay, and they're struggling for playoffs. I know Bruce Boudreau came out the other day and said, you know, we're gonna be a hard team for teams to play against. I don't know if I see that when it's all said and done. Who could be available? I think we all know, we've heard the name Charlie Coyle. He could be available. Look, he's better, at least in my eyes, when he plays center. He's been center wing center there. Eric Staal will be available, no question about it. You know, with Koivu's injury right now, if they can't bring in something, which I just don't see them paying the big price, guys, for another, you know, big guy to take that, that we'll call it second line center type mentality. I think they sell guys. Do you want a guy like Marcus Foligno, fourth line type of guy? He could be available. I think Jonas Brodin could be available. He's had a better year, but still he hasn't been the kind of player that they thought he'd be a couple of years ago when they signed to a multi-year contract. So I think there's some guys on the team that could, and I think there'll be some guys that will create a little bit of interest here and there.
Does Charlie Coyle fit here?
Well, I don't know, because I think he does want to play center. So you could say, all right, can you fit him in? Will he play that third line center role? Would that make him satisfied? I'm not sure. I think he views himself as higher in the lineup than that. Could he end up being that guy? I haven't seen enough out of him, fellas, to say that, you know, he's going to be a 50, 60 point guy as a number two center. But I like him at times when he plays hard. He's got, 1 year left on his contract?
Yeah, year at $3.2 million cap hit. It's not, you know, it's a pretty affordable deal.
Yeah, but then he wants a lot more. I think he thinks himself as a $6 million guy. And so now you're saying, okay, what am I giving up to get him? I do think that the Bruins, you know, he's a local kid, and they always take that into consideration, both the good and they always make sure that that player, at least they try to make sure that player can handle it. We know some that haven't been able to, and some that have. Chris Wagner's a perfect example of a guy that's been able to handle it beautifully. I think they'll kick tires on it. I do. I think they'll see what it would take to perhaps try and get that.
All right, Billy, we got L.A. Kings tonight. Just saw them a week ago. Yeah. What do you think of the matchup tonight as the Bruins go back to back out on the West Coast?
I think if the Bruins play a smart road game, which I know they did last night. They're playing a team in Anaheim that really looks discombobulated right now. But I think LA's in a similar situation. They're going to play hard. They're definitely going to play heavy. Bruins, if they get a little more finish going to their game, I think they can take this team again. I do. I do think that they're much better than them. I'm curious to see, fellas, what the lineup will be tonight. Will they take David Backes out? Will they put Carson Kuhlman in for his first game? He definitely adds some straight line speed, but then you're talking about a lineup that could include, you know, a rookie on the right wing, a rookie at center, and then probably a guy like Nordstrom on the left. I'm just curious to see what they do there. But I'm also curious to see, I know they won, do they keep the same D? But I think the Bruins overall have better team speed than LA, better depth. Don't just keep the game on the wall against them. Move it to the middle of the ice, and I think the Bruins could do well.
All right, Billy, we appreciate the time as always.
Gentlemen, have a wonderful Saturday.
You too. Billy Jaffe, Nesson, Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline.
I didn't get to ask my question.
I'm sorry.
That's all right.
You got to jump in. You got to be aggressive.
I know. Well, it was about his autographed photo being on the wall.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Tell the story real quick.
All right.
Whether he's here to listen to it or not.
So I love the Nassau Coliseum. I'm one of these psychos that loves the Coliseum. I go there for a game 1 year. They have a pool at the hotel next to the Coliseum. It's February. I want to go swimming. I'll go swimming. So I walk by. There's also a barbershop in this hotel, which I learned on my walk to the pool. In the barbershop, barbershop's closed, by the way, there's a framed photo of Billy Jaffe with an autograph on it. I want to know, A, how often did he go there? B, did they ask for the autograph before or after the haircut? Because I think before is a very risky game. I'm signing this for you. You might give me a bad haircut. Here you go.
Was it a picture of him that had been taken at the barbershop?
No, it's just like a headshot.
I would want a picture of him having just had his hair cut at the barbershop to make sure that they do a good job.
They put a little bag of like the hair. They're like, this was Billy Jaffe's really gross barbershop.
And I would make a comment, but I can't be making those types of comments. Thanks for hanging out with us.
Hey, anytime. This is fun.
Excellent. We will be back with you next Saturday here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Stick around for Gasper and Murray coming up next.
You're listening to the Sports Hub Hockey Show on 98.5, the Sports Hub. BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music.
Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.